Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your Anime Degens with another episode of the BS Hour. This is episode 65 of the BS Hour, in case you're interested. Today, guys, we'll be going on a Degen review of Delicious in Dungeon. But first, I got to check on my boy. Tyler, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great over here. We're missing Dan a little bit today. But I think maybe there's a possibility that he comes back next week. But yeah, I kind of need a nap, but maybe I'll take one after this.
Yeah, I need one. I'm going to try to hold out until I got to go to sleep, but I could use one. I would love to be napping. But yeah, I talked to Dan today. He is somewhere in the Midwest driving through cornfields at the moment.
So wait,
I don't envy him.
Hold up. You said driving through cornfields. I hope not, Bass. I hope he's driving on the road.
Good point. Hopefully on the road.
Ain't that how some of them horror stories started? Like Children of the Corn and shit, bro?
Nah, for real. You're right. But yes, guys, as always, the best way to support us, rate the podcast, tell your friends about us. And if you have any interesting topics you want us to cover, we almost always get around to them. We might put a little extra DGN flair on them, but they'll mainly be what you send us. So we always do appreciate that. We enjoy, because you guys have some great ideas, like truly. But yeah, let us know in the Discord, threads, Twitter. If you need another way to contact us, linktree.com/animedegens. We have an email. I don't know if anybody checks it, but we have an email.
I check it. We also got like a form thing too, so that you can actually put your stuff in the Linktree as well. So
fill out the fucking form. Ignore everything I just said. Fill out the form.
Do it any way you can. Do it any way you want to. So get it in there. That's what we're trying to say.
Main takeaway, listen to Tyler. Don't listen to me.
Listen to all of us.
Tyler, you want to get us started with some news real quick?
Yeah, so the first bit of news we got, and I think a lot of people's going to be happy, Quintessential Quintuplets, they announced that there's going to be another movie, and it's going to be an original, meaning that, you know, there's not any manga content that's being adapted or whatever. It's going to be supervised by Neji Haruba, which is the creator, the mangaka. And it is going to be about, I've heard rumors, it's not really confirmed yet, it's going to be about the honeymoon and such, what came after the last movie. So I think a lot of people are going to be happy about that, as long as they don't go too crazy with it, you know? So
I can see that. I have yet to watch any of that. Doesn't seem like my kind of show, but I'm happy for the people that are happy about it.
Yeah, me and Krieg's out here happy. It's all, you know.
Hey, if y'all are happy, I'm happy.
That's how that hopefully goes. So.
Hopefully. Okay.
Yeah.
So next, guys, we have My Hero Academia. Season 7 starts May 4th. That's coming up quick on us. It is America Mommy's time to shine. Thick thighs save lives. So I'm excited to learn a little bit more about her. We only got the one little visual of her last season. So how you feeling about it, Tyler?
Well, we don't need All Might no more because we have America Mommy now.
Damn.
All Might can finally retire in peace. So
yeah. She was All Might's apprentice at one point, right?
I think so. I think they worked together some. This kind of just got sprung up on us, right? Like we didn't really know like all the other continents or whatever, like really wasn't in the plot line or whatever until just recently. So that's, I think, true. We're going to have to learn a lot about like what's going on everywhere else now. So,
yeah. And I'm especially excited because our brothers and sisters over in Japan always display us Americans in the most flamboyant way possible. So I'm always excited to see, you know, how they create characters that are American.
Yeah, they done a wonderful job on America Mommy so far, from what I could tell. So
I'm with it.
But the next piece of news that we got, the Japanese band Flow, which you probably know from like Naruto and a couple other different animes they've made OPs for, is actually starting their first five continent tour, which includes performing at Otakon cons. And those cons are going to be like in Oregon, California, Colorado, Illinois, Washington, D.C., New York City, Maine, Michigan, Kansas City, Texas, like a lot of different places, even like Australia, South America, Europe, Asia. Like, they're going crazy right now. And I'm not sure like the Japanese bands, I'm pretty sure they usually don't come over here to the States and like perform
not
like
often or do like big tours like this. Only complaint, and I'll always complain about it. What about Atlanta, bro? What about Atlanta, bro? Come on.
Well, you know, they said Texas is close enough, bro.
That hurts. That hurts. I feel like they pop off in Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, it's exclusively Otakon, so I don't know, like, if Atlanta has, like, Otakons or, like, if it's another, like, it Crunchyroll shit or something, probably down in Atlanta. I'm not sure. But who knows? But this is big news for like a lot of people that's already planned on going to Otakon. So
very true. Yeah. But Atlanta needs a little bit more anime love, man. Regardless.
Kentucky does too. We don't get shit like that, but I guess I'd have to go to like Illinois or whatever in order to get a little taste of it, or Kansas, you know, so.
True. Well, our last piece of news, I had to add this. Mashal Magic and Muscles apparently has a stage play, and they're getting a part two. And they announced some additional cast for it, but please let us know on the Twitter, specifically me, Bass. Let me know who's rocking with Mashal this hard, because that's very interesting to me. We've covered two seasons of it. I really like it, but I didn't know we were doing stage plays. So here it is.
Yeah, I was talking to Bass about this, and I was like, the only thing I can think of is they're cashing in on the Harry Potter like references. You know, like they're doing that comedy Harry Potter skit bullshit, and that has to be it, right?
It really does. It really does. But so. Hey, more power to him. I love it.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to watch it, though.
No. I'll stick to the anime. But, all right, guys. Now it is time for your DGen review of Dungeon Meshi, a.k.a. Delicious in Dungeon. So, this anime premiered on Netflix of January 4th this year and is produced by Studio Trigger, who has also done Kill la Kill, Early in the Fronx, Cyberpunk Edge Runners, and Star Wars Visions, which I didn't realize they did Star Wars Visions. If you haven't seen that, it's pretty tight. I'm a big Star Wars fan myself. This also has an 8.1 on MAL so far for this season. Currently, we're on episode 17, so we're going to give you a non-spoiler section like we do with our movie and show reviews, and then we'll work into a spoiler section later on in the show. So watch out for that warning before you get spoiled. Like I said, we'll be covering everything up to episode 17. But for you guys that don't know, this anime follows a group of broke-ass adventurers that are looking for a comrade that was taken by a dragon. And to make up for their lack of money, they've begun whipping up some meals as they from the monsters they encounter in this dungeon, all while learning to appreciate the culinary potential of their surroundings. So eating monsters out of a dungeon is not something I've heard of before. It was very funny. But Tyler, we're both watching this. We've watched every episode so far, me and him. So Tyler, what got you interested in watching this anime?
I was kind of skeptical at first, honestly. After like watching a few other at least one other show that was kind of similar. And you know, sometimes these shows like this is, they get advertised as one thing and, you know, they don't really go the way you think they were going to go or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I kind of came onto this from actually Pete from What Do You Say Anime. He was talking about this. I think he'd read some of the manga or whatever, and he was acting like this was going to be a good show. So I was like, you know, what the hell, you know, I'm going to watch it or whatever. Especially since it's going to be dubbed or whatever, I can just watch and chill and not have to really think about it or whatever. And that's kind of how I went into it. As far as expectations, I didn't know if I would like it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I thought that I would probably dislike it as it went on. I thought that maybe I would probably get bored of it, you know, depending on how it went. So I guess because the campfire cooking in another world, you know, I thought it was going to be different or whatever.
Okay.
And I don't know. It had me feeling like, scared, I guess you could say, right, going into this. So
very, very cautious. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I didn't start watching this until like early April. Maybe not even that long ago, but I had heard people talk about it, and then I started watching it, and I was texting you about it, and you were like, it gets better, because it seemed just like, you know, like a very generic adventure anime centered around cooking, and I'm like, how exciting can this be?
Exactly.
I also like to cook a lot, so I was like, let's see what they're talking about, but I think this has exceeded my expectations. Kind of like going through the show. But yeah, we've seen a few different cooking shows. Campfire Cooking, you already mentioned that one. I didn't have the pleasure of doing that first look with you guys.
Really?
But we also have watched Food Wars, which I liked a lot more. There were some things I didn't like, but how does it compare to those like two shows in your opinion?
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention, like, so Campfire Cooking Another World, like, it wasn't like a bad show per se. It's just that when I first started watching it, like when I went into it, like I expected it to be kind of what Dungeon Meshi is, right? So I expected it to be like cooking, but with some action and stuff going on the side too. But what we really got with like Campfire Cooking Another World is just basically the cooking aspect, like in an isekai type fantasy world. And you didn't really get to see any of like the action from what I watched of it. And I think once again, I'm going to mention Pete as well. He done a really good job. I never thought about it like this, but he called it like a slice of life. And it honestly is more of a slice of life. And I think that's the issue I had with it when I first started watching it, is that I thought it was going to be what Delicious in Dungeon is, and it was actually more like a slice of life. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Okay, yeah. And I can see why Dan would have such a negative view of it, because he does not like slice of life. That's not generally his thing. Yeah.
And going back to like what makes this, like if I like this show better, or what makes this show different or whatever, like, I think this show does like a really good job of like splitting that up. I think it shows like just as like good representation of like the food cooking aspect, mm-hmm. but in a unique way. And then it also has, it shows you how they got those ingredients from the dungeon itself. And like it does a lot of things very good, and like, It adds them all together. So it's not just like a cooking anime. Like, I kind of thought it was going to be just like a cooking anime, kind of like Campfire Cooking in Another World, but it's not. So, and no. It's got like the humor with like Food War too. So,
yeah, there's plenty of humor. I think humor is like a cornerstone of this show. But like you said, like you get to see how they come up with these ingredients, like the monsters that they fight. And like, there's so many trials and tribulations with that. Like, there's only, it's a large part of the show overall, but as far as like inside the episode, it doesn't take up that much time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that, how they split it up. It's still integrated well, but it's definitely, I feel like, a separate part of the show in a way.
Yeah, and you can actually, like, when they go into, like, the cooking moments or whatever, you can actually tell that they're going into the cooking moments. And, like, you know what that's going to be. It's going to be them explaining what's going into this dish, how they made use of all the different monsters that they disposed of or, like, collected or, like, all that stuff. It actually does, like, a really fun job of incorporating all that into this cooking session, which, honestly, I think that it's kind of like Food Wars in a way. Like, you could honestly probably make this shit, you know, obviously with without the monster.
Yeah.
You could, like, do it with what they're substituting the monsters with or whatever, probably, and be okay with it. So,
Very true. Yeah, I think they did a really good job with it. But yeah, the kind of the next question I want to ask, and I think this is something you usually touch on when you're talking about this show. Like, did you watch it sub or dub?
I'm watching it dubbed. I enjoy it a lot more dubbed. Not saying the subbed isn't good. I watched like a couple episodes subbed, and the subbed is really good too. But this show, like I said, it was more of my chill show. So, and the fact that it's simul dubbed as well, I just started watching it dubbed, and I just kept on watching it dubbed. And one of the main reasons is the whole cast pretty much is like really good dubbed voice actors. You got like Emily Rudd from Nami from One Piece Live Action. I really enjoyed her as Nami in One Piece Live Action. And I really enjoy her as Marcel in Dungeon Meshi. I just love it. I just love the dubbed version of this.
Yeah, I think Senshi, Laos, they both have great voice actors. Fallon has a good voice actor. I mean, almost all the characters have pretty unique voices, particularly Senshi. I really like Senshi's voice. Yeah.
Yes.
And it fits his like big burly character. I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of next I want to get into some world building, because that's a large part of adventure anime and anime in general. Like, these are all fantasy made up worlds for the most part, and the mangaka has to build it for you, has to build it out. And something with it's only going to be 24 episode season, they have to cram a good amount into those 24 episodes. And we have watched a lot of shows with some great world building, and I thought how they paced it out and how they kind of broke up the anime did a great job of the world building, kind of telling us like why the dungeon exists, some lore about the dungeon, and even like the different factions with the different types of people, like the ogres and Littlefoots and the dwarves and everything. What would you think about it?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of like the world building in this, which I really don't remember all the little fine details about why it was created and all that shit. But I really enjoy that they like don't give it to us all at once. Like, this dungeon is mysterious, and this dungeon, like, we're still learning about it. Like, in the last few episodes, we're still learning about it. How it's different, and it is really different from like the outside world. There's only certain things that you can do here and there that you can't do out in the up top or whatever in the real world,
right?
Which is pretty fun for me. Like, this, it took this dungeon anime and made it into a interesting dungeon anime. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I definitely feel you, as far as like how it's paced out, and like how it's still mysterious, because they don't really tell you too much up front. I think the first episode, it tells you why the dungeon's there, but it doesn't tell you like the logistics of people, how they deal with it. They tell you about the money problems that the party's having, but they really don't tell you much until you have to know. And even then, they're showing it to you and not telling it to you.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's always good writing, because if you have somebody just constantly explaining stuff like that, or if you have like a narrator coming in, and it's like, oh, this is why this is. It's like, it seems lazy to me, and they don't do that at all. So I've really been enjoying that.
And I also think that Senshi plays a very good role in the world building aspect of the dungeon. like through his point of view, he actually tells us kind of what we need to know about the dungeon, or whatever, since he like lives there or whatever. So
yeah. One thing that I found really interesting and something we should warn people that are thinking about watching this is the pacing. And what you get from the first, I'd say several episodes, right? Because this is what I was really texting you about when I started watching it after maybe like the second or third episode. Starts off a little slow.
It does.
and without going too far into it, this is me just watching this all in the last maybe 4 weeks. If you stick with it, it does pay off a lot. It's not necessarily what you see is what you get at first.
Yeah. The best way I can describe it is, like you start watching this, like it's kind of chill, whatever. Like you stick around for like the humor and the character interactions, which is like what the first little bit is like built on, I guess. That's why I stuck around. I just enjoyed like the interactions between the party or whatever, while they was eating the food and all that stuff, and fighting. But then after like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 episodes, like it just increasingly like starts getting better and different with each episode after that, until you finally get to like, oh shit, like I need to watch this on the day it came out, because what the hell happened? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Type shit.
Like you're saying, like, yeah, around like episode like 6, I think like it like starts ramping up significantly. And then like by episode 9 or 10, maybe it's like, yo, what the fuck is going on for real? It gets really intense after a while. So don't let the first 4 or 5 episodes scare you. I usually give shows 3 to 4 episodes before I'm like, okay, like what, you know, you got to pull me in or I'm out of here. If I didn't text you and ask you about it, I probably would have dropped it, but I'm glad I did not.
Yeah.
So thank you for letting me know.
Yeah. I mean, cause in the first, what, 4 or 5 episodes, like not a lot really happens. Like it's just mostly about, like cooking this food and showing us how like these foods are cooked, and like I guess kind of like how the dungeon is built and what creatures are in the dungeon, I guess. Mm-hmm. It focuses more on the food aspect early on, and then it doesn't really go away from that. It just like switches the focus from the food being the main topic for the actual like other stuff that's surrounding it being the main topic, while still getting the food segments, because food is important in a dungeon. If you don't have that, then you're probably not going to make it far. It's shown very well in this show. So,
right. Yeah. They definitely, then she's going to teach you a little bit about nutrition.
Yeah.
during this. Yeah. And then getting like kind of getting into the animation, Studio Trigger, they did a bang up job with all the other shows that they have done. Cyberpunk Edgerunners is amazing looking. It's very, very different, but amazing looking. So same thing with the Star Wars Visions. Kill la Kill is very unique in a way as well. This one seemed more basic from Studio Trigger. And I'm going to say basic for 2024.
Yeah.
Because I think 10 years ago, basic meant something else. But it's just basic for 2024. It's a good animation, but nothing really flashy. I wouldn't write home about it, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing I love about it is it does what it needs to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, like we get some like heavy fight scenes like later on or whatever, and it's actually really good fight scenes. Like they done a really good job on them. I think like the food looking beautiful, like everything else is like they done a really good job, but it's not gonna blow you out of the water, you know?
Yeah, you can tell they take their time and spend their money on the food.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like we've said a ton of times, I mean, it's called Delicious in Dungeon. So yeah, they're gonna definitely spend money on animating the food, but yeah, it does what it needs to do. And like I always say, it's the icing on the cake. It's not the cake. So this was decent icing on a great cake, in my opinion.
And I honestly haven't really noticed like any bad CGI or
it's smooth,
like,
man, it's smooth. Yeah.
If there is any, like it's good. Like it's actually pretty good CGI. Most of it seems like non-CGI though. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it's just the cell fill stuff. But yeah.
Yeah,
no bad animation whatsoever. Basic, very strong though. But yeah, Studio Trigger, doing it again. Doing a good job.
Yeah.
Do you have any like favorite characters you wanna talk about? Or character?
Yeah, so my favorite character actually, I guess it's best to say this. My favorite is Marcel. I really love Marcel. Her interactions, like she's super funny. I don't know. I just really like her. Maybe the fact that Emily Rudd plays her, and I really like Nami. Maybe, you know, I don't know. But I kind of like, I really like Lyles too. Like he's so unhinged about all this shit, and I really like that. And I really like Senshi as well. Now, like, what's his name? Chilchuck. Chilchuck's all right. Like, he's not one of my favorites. I like him still. Fallen's all right, but we really haven't really got to know her very well like the rest of them. But Senshi, Marcel, and Lyles is my top three. And, like, one of my favorite moments of Senshi is, like, the bread scene. Like, bread.
No, he gets
bread.
So hyped. Yeah. He gets so hyped on the bread.
I love that shit, bro.
Everybody loves bread. But yeah, I have a very similar top three. I'm going to say Marcel. It's my favorite. She has so many different like good interactions with the rest of the crew, party, I should say. And she's also like very self-conscious and is kind of working on that while she's in the dungeon. Senshi, obviously, but I actually really like Chilchuck as a character.
Okay.
I would be, if he was real, I'd be very annoyed to be around him, but his purpose in the show, I think, is really cool.
He's like the grounded.
He's
center,
very realistic.
Right?
Yeah, so. He's really realistic. He's scared of dying. He's scared of starving, like a normal person would be. So yeah, like he, I would say, yeah, he's very, very grounded.
Which I mean, and I'm pretty sure that Chilchuck is one of the. He's kind of older compared to everyone else there, maybe.
Yeah, I think he's older than Marcel.
Yeah.
They treat him like he's a little kid, though. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Because he's like a little foot mini human. But yeah. It seems he's the most mature in the group by a mile. If I was a kid, I definitely think he was a grouch. But he's just like a normal adult.
Who do you think's the most immature in the group?
Lyles.
Not Senshi? I feel like him and Senshi could possibly go head to head in like immaturity.
I feel like Senshi is like just ignorant though. I feel like like he's just like kind of like always trying to see the positive and shit, and like he's just like, yeah, let's do it, you know. But Lyles is like running head first in the brick wall, immature.
One thing like I can't like help but not think about is the moment where like Senshi was on his back screaming and kicking like a baby.
Okay, that's fair. those are the probably out of the character list that I see in front of me, the two most immature. But that's why Senshi's so entertaining. He has those bits of wisdom, which is the only reason why I put him like below Lyles in immaturity, whereas Lyles is supposed to be like the leader, but like he's just like always doing dumb shit.
Well, you can't learn nothing, Bass, unless you live it, right?
That's what Lyles would say. Why learn from other people's mistakes? I can make them myself.
Yeah, and learn faster from them.
Since we've been talking about music a little bit more on the podcast as well, I wanted to know if you had any OPs or EDs that like particularly slapped for you.
Yeah, I've honestly like really liked all of them, but the first OP,
Sleepwalking Orchestra, yes sir.
Yeah, that shit, yes. Like it starts out kind of like, you know, slower or whatever, but then it just like hits. And mm-hmm. when it hits, like it hits.
Yeah, when the beat drops, it goes crazy. Yeah, that one by far is my favorite. I don't really like the OP2 that they've been on. I like the visuals more than OP1, but the actual song is like not really. It's not something I could listen to outside of the show. I could definitely walk to sleep, listen to Sleepwalking Orchestra, like just in my car.
Oh yeah. And speaking of like the first OP. Like the first ED as well. Like both of them was in my top five of the winter season. The top five EDs and top five OPs, in my opinion.
Okay.
So if you haven't like listened to the ED all the way through, you definitely should, because it is good as well. Not as good as Sleepwalking Orchestra, but good still.
Okay, I might have to listen to it the whole way through. I've listened to a little bit of it, but you know, Netflix has that skip, that play next button.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hate that shit quick.
Yeah, but not many people stick around for the EDs, but they'll stick around for the OPs.
Yeah, yeah. I'll listen to it a few times before I start skipping that too. But yeah, like who do you... I'm just going to ask you who would and wouldn't enjoy this show. I wouldn't give this to somebody that's impatient or that maybe doesn't care about cooking. If you're into this for fight scenes, not for you either.
I think I would give it to mostly anyone, but I would have to let them know, hey, like it doesn't really get like super, super interesting until like later on, you know. You have to like stick with it, and wait for it, because then it'll like drag you in. And right. Like that's probably what I would say. I mean, there's going to be some people that doesn't enjoy this. And especially if they get like antsy and bored anytime there's any kind of like downtime or some shit, you know. This probably isn't for you, because there's like a lot of downtime. There's like a lot of just sitting around talking moments. But there is some like really good action scenes later in the season.
There are, but you have to get so far in.
Yeah.
Like we're talking a good bit of a ways in. So I wouldn't say like stick around just for that.
Yeah, it's not for that. This show isn't that, you know?
No. And if you're like looking for like super deep, fight scenes, like something like Naruto, early Shippuden and original Naruto, where it's like really tactical. No, not for you, but animation solid. I also wouldn't recommend this to somebody that doesn't really like anime or is like very new to anime. If you like Lord of the Rings, this is something that you would like as well. If you like Frieren, you would like this. But yeah, if you're here for the boxing, like I almost always am, maybe not the first thing you should be watching.
Yeah, even though it does have fights early on, it's more like educational fights. Like right. they're low skill educational fights,
and they're over pretty quickly for the most part.
I think like the first like big one is probably like the first like decent one is probably like around episode 7 or something like that.
Yeah, 7 or 8. Yeah.
And that's when they actually get like a little bit more like, I guess, skilled. I guess the dungeon gets a little bit more skilled. I think they're on lower levels or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this show is like pretty good. It's just not for people who wants like straight up action all the time. I think if you're like a big fan of like Dungeons and Dragons type shit, like Bass said, Lord of the Rings really type shit.
Yeah.
Like this is it, because like we don't really know a whole lot about this. Feels like a Dungeons and Dragon like show.
Oh, 100%.
Like we don't really know what can happen in this dungeon, but we're being told as we go what can happen in this dungeon, kind of deal. So right. It keeps it interesting for me. So
true. But yeah, overall, I'd definitely say if you're listening to this podcast, you probably will enjoy it. Just watch out for recommending it to friends who are not super heavy into anime quite yet. But yeah, this being 17 episodes in, we're going to do a little too early ratings of the season. And I will let you go first, Tyler, and I'll follow you up.
So I'm going to kind of break it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to say I recommend this dubbed over subbed. I think dubbed is like much more enjoyable, at least in my experience for this show. And I'm going to break it down with the first cower, which is the first 12 episodes. And then I think I'm going to give that like a probably like a 7.5.
Okay.
Only solid. Because it started like kind of getting hard at the end of the first cower. Now the second cower, we're only like 5 episodes deep in it, but so far I'm going to give it like a high 8.
That's fair. So, I think that's very fair.
This whole show, this whole season is probably going to round out to probably be a 9, depending on how it finishes. Probably no lower than an 8, honestly, but probably a 9. So,
okay. For me, I might as well break it down into the cores as well. First 12 episodes, I got to give it like a 6.8 or a 6.7, somewhere in that range, just because it started so slow and I would have given up on it if I hadn't talked to you. So I can't give it too high of a score. Even though looking back, I like it and I see the reason why they did it. But while I was in it, and as soon as I got through the first 12, that's probably what I would have given it. Now that we're 5 episodes into the second cower, the last 5 episodes, I got to give it like a high 7, low 8. I'm going to do 8.1. I'm going to do 8.1 on the second 5 episodes so far.
Okay.
We still got 7 to go. But overall, when this is all said and done, how it's going, it's probably going to be around an 8 for me. It's really good.
Bro, the people that ain't watching this shit, like the last episode that me and Bash just watched, episode 17.
Missing out.
Freaking crazy, bro. Like,
yeah, it's nuts. It's absolutely crazy. I just can't imagine any of this happening in this show at all.
Like, and it's crazy. Bass said we have 7 episodes left. I just can't possibly see where we're going, like what we're going to get out of this, because like it's already just so wild right now. So
truly, truly wild. But you want to let them know what's up next?
Yeah. So now we're going to get into the spoiler zone. And this is where we take a little deeper dive into like the plot, and we will possibly be talking about things all the way up until episode 17. So if you haven't seen this show or haven't caught up to episode 17, just be warned that this will contain spoilers for this show up to episode 17. So either go watch it or just be spoiled.
Speak now or be spoiled. So let's get off to it. And this is the first question that I have to ask, because we've talked so much about it already. Dungeon Meshi starts off very lighthearted. You know, we find Denshi, we just cooking up some stuff, dealing with very fairly easy monsters to deal with, like pretty low difficulty. And then shit gets fucking dark. We kind of get a little bit more into like Fallon actually being killed, fighting the fucking dragon, people getting wiped I mean, absolutely crushed by Fallon's dragon harpy bullshit form. But I want to like specifically focus on like that transition around episode, I say 9 to 12. What was your first impression of it? And you looking back, do you think it was handled very well?
I think so, because like we don't really see like a lot of dark. I mean, we kind of see hints of darkness here and there in the early episodes. Mm-hmm. And I think we didn't. So at first we didn't really know how death worked, and we still really truly don't know how death works. Like 100%, but we also found out before it got dark that, you kind of don't die there. Like if you die, your soul remains there and you have the ability to be revived. And we learned that before all the dark stuff like starts happening, like all the deaths and stuff. I think we figured that out with the fake treasure chest, right?
Right, with Kabru's party. Because they kind of like show up and like they get killed. I guess jumped by like the bugs and I think another monster as well. I don't think it was just the bugs. But yeah, in this specific dungeon, because of the magic in it from the dungeon master, your soul kind of stays chained to your body.
Yeah.
I think in other dungeons it's a little bit more dangerous that way, is what they were saying. Dying's a way bigger deal in the other dungeons because your soul like gets farther and farther away from your body as time goes on.
Yeah. And I think they did a good job of showing that at the right time, because if they wouldn't have shown that, then it probably would have been, I guess, a rougher time for people. I think the first time, like, so they went from being all about cooking and stuff and only showing like some darkness here and there. And then I think around the episode with the mermaids, right? The mermaids and the Kelpie thing. Mm-hmm. And that whole episode, I think that's the turning point for me.
Kelpie was a fucking creep.
Yeah. And since she was like, oh, well, I've interacted with this like horse Kelpie thing for ages, and like it's my friend, and like, I'm just gonna ride it across the water, and then it just tries to kill him or whatever. And I was like, oh
damn, isn't she
okay? Like immediately
it's just like, nah, you're coming to the bottom of this pool with me.
Yeah. And so like that moment, I was like, the show shifted for me. Right. And then after that episode, like it just continually started adding more and more dark like moments into the episode until we got to like where Bass was talking about, where like it truly hits that time, I think around the time when Fallen gets revived or whatever. That's that was probably also the darkest. Like that's where the darkest shit was at the time. So
it's like this dude is putting his sister together bone by bone.
Yeah.
And like digging through entrails of this dragon, putting his sister back together. That's like, does it get much more dark than that? Like it's so fucked. Another thing was like the mermaids and like eating them. I thought it was even like a little fucked up. Because they were like, it seemed like they were like humanoids. And that was very uneasy for me as well. But I thought a warning notification would have been nice around episode 10 or something like that. But yeah, I thought it was a very quick descent into darkness, what we had. But we kind of had that switch to like more focusing about Fallon and like what it really takes to get through these lower parts of the dungeon. So the progression made sense looking back, but yeah, I thought it was handled pretty good.
Yeah, if it would have went from like episode like 1 to 4 or whatever type stuff, and went straight into like the Fallon resurrection scene, like I would've been like, what are we watching? You know. But I think they handled the transition pretty smoothly because they just they got increasingly, they added more to it. They did darker and darker scenes, you know, moments or whatever up until that point. And then we're like, that's pretty messed up, but still like, okay, it's not like I wasn't expecting some shit like this, you know?
Right. Instead of cannonballing into the deep end, we got our toes wet and then our feet, and we walked out, you know, to our waist height. And then they kind of just shoved us on down the slide there. But so which vibes do you like more? You like the more like lighthearted, like first, you know, six to eight episodes, or like what we're dealing with now?
Well, you know me, Bass. I'm all for the darkness. I want to see the darkness. even though like the first little bit was like slice of life, heaven for like people like me, like with all the interactions, the character interactions and stuff, which the show thrived on early, and it still does, in my opinion. It's just like a darker, more worrisome tone now.
It is. It's a lot more serious. You kind of realize how much is at stake. And like looking back, like they didn't even really explain what happened to Fallon. They just said the dragon got her. I thought the dragon like had her locked in a fucking tower or some shit. And then we realized she got eaten by the dragon. And I was like, oh shit, people die in this. You know, like before that, we really have no clue that people like die and are like getting eaten. You know, because even with Kaburu's party, they were dead, but like they were in one piece and were very easily revived by like the Undertakers.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it was a ramp up.
And the crazy thing is, we found out about like Fallen getting eight or whatever before we knew how deaths worked in this dungeon. And even after we figured out how deaths worked in this dungeon, we still didn't know how, like, so the first 4 to 5 episodes before we actually figured out about like Cabra, about how deaths worked, I was so confused, Bass. Like, I was like, the whole point of the show is to save Fallen, but yet we're like acting like she's okay. We're acting like we're not in a hurry to go save her because she's being ate by a dragon. Like, I was just so confused by that. And then after we learned how deaths truly work, then I kind of got over that, and it made more sense why they wasn't in such a big hurry. But then again, like, we don't really truly know how being swallowed and digested works, which, I mean, we do now after episode, 12 or whatever, so.
Right. I thought they were going to find her before she got digested.
Yeah,
I think that's what they were hoping for too, but that's just not how it worked out at all.
They was cooking too much, bro.
Yeah, we got fucking Senshi making hot pot meals and shit, like ramen noodle this shit, bro. Make it quick. But yeah, like, we also had like a secondary storyline with Kaburu's group. Like, we talked about them getting killed once, but they got killed twice. Second by the mermaids. And his whole party was very suspicious of Laos, and then particularly of Chilchuck. It seemed like they don't have a very high opinion of Chilchuck. He's kind of a dick. Marcel, they did not know she used black magic at first. They just knew she went to school probably with Laos' sister or something like that. But what did you think would happen when they first met? I thought it was going to be like pure chaos. Like, you fucking robbed us. Blah, blah, blah. You stole our food. What the fuck is wrong with you? And we just didn't get that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more intense and hostile as well. But I think that it showed us how. So one thing that helped them kind of, I think, was the fact that they was with like a group that had already interacted with Laos and them before. So when they met, they kind of met on, you know, neutral ground or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. They knew each other. They seemed like friends, like, and I think that Cabra is a smart person, and he sat back and watched the interactions, and he realized that, oh, well, it's not worth being mad because they literally are, it seemed like, good people or whatever, right?
So. Right. Like, yeah, his party, Cabri's party was asking him, like, yo, like, they killed us, bro, like, you know, or whatever. Like, they stole our shit. Like, what are we going to do? He's like, let's wait to see what really happened. Because he's like, it seems like they don't feel bad or, like, they're being pretty chill. And, like, they're just being very matter-of-fact about telling people about what's going on. They've been eating monsters for some fucking reason. and, like, it was, that was very level-headed of him. Because that's not how I would have approached the situation. Like, bro, like, you stole our food. What the fuck? He's like, oh, no, it was all soggy and shit from the pond. And he was like, yeah, we set you aside so the Undertakers could come get you. It's like, okay. He's like, okay. That's not how I would have done that. Yeah. So props to him.
And it's, we also, like, during that same time, we also got, like, Marcel freaking out about, that she wanted to tell them what really happened or whatever, because she was worried about what they might think or whatever. And I really enjoyed that they showed the two different point of views about the same subject, showing us that both sides actually cared about it, but they just didn't want to, like, I guess, start something or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I think it's also, like, it's illegal for the adventurers to, like, fight each other in the dungeons. So they had to be a little bit more amicable. And I just thought about that because Cabru mentioned that at a separate time before they even ran into Laos's group.
Yeah, I think them collectors or whatever, scam collectors or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that storyline right there showed us or taught us about what was not right to do or whatever, because they threatened to turn them in or whatever for the things that they was doing. They was literally sending people off to die so they could, like, basically grave rob them or whatever and upcharge their revival fees or whatever. So
yeah, it was a fuckboy. Yeah. He was, like, telling them lies so they would, like, potentially die again so they could get paid again.
Yeah. Which is wild to me, but
hey man, that man's got a family to feed.
It's a free world out there, you know what I mean? Like, lawless, sure. I guess. I don't know.
But yeah, like, going back to, like, talking about like, all the meals, I have to say, like, my favorite meal is when after Chilchuck, like, escaped, like, that little prison room with the mimic, and they cooked it up and, like, had, like, that seafood boil type thing. I think it was, like, a seafood boil or something like that. Or, like, seafood ramen or something like that. And it made me eat seafood that night because I was like, what should I eat tonight? I didn't feel like cooking. And I was, like, watching that right after work, and I was like, some seafood sounds nice. So that by far was my favorite meal because it actually made me eat something similar to what they were eating on the show.
Okay. For me, like, I didn't really, like, look too deep into the meals. I thought that, like, I really enjoyed when they ate the freaking dragon. I thought that was cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
I mean, you know, how much disrespect can you, like, put out there? It's like I'm gonna kill you, the biggest, baddest thing in this dungeon, then I'm gonna sit here and eat you right after we just reassembled Fallen's corpse, right?
And they cooked the motherfucker right next to the rest of his body. It was mad disrespectful.
Yeah, like, it was, that was the most memorable, I don't know if I would say favorite, but that was the most memorable cooking scene for me.
It was very savage. And then Laos was like, that was Laos's favorite meal. He was like, the sweetness, the texture, the tenderness.
Some of these moments literally reminded me of Food Wars, bro. I thought Laos was going to have a moment, so.
Yeah, and another good thing I liked about it was, like, how Marcel, she went from, like, always being like, no, I'm not gonna fucking eat that, and then by, like, episode 17, she's like, yeah, let's just cook that shit.
Yeah, her and Chilchuck was always just like, no. I'm pretty sure they had to force Chilchuck to eat shit like multiple times.
Oh, like the mimic, because he hates mimics. Yeah, yeah, he was like, I can't eat that.
Yeah.
He's like, nah, it's pretty good actually.
Speaking of like, I think it was Dave. We was talking to Dave here recently, and Dave mentioned how messed up it was to actually like eat, cook these meals up and shit. Like for one instance, like Cabras, when they first met him, that party, with the dead, fake treasure or whatever that killed him. I think he said he had an issue with like what the show was doing with the, cooking up food next to dead bodies. And we see it again, obviously with Fallen, right?
Yeah.
We did. And like, did you have an issue with that or like, or what?
I didn't give a shit. I remember him mentioning that. I was like, yeah, he was like, that threw him for a loop. And I was like, I didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah. I mean, When it first happened with like Cabras and the fake treasure, the coins or whatever, like we didn't really know how death worked, right? So I was like, this is kind of wild. I really thought that. I was like, this is kind of wild. They're literally like eating rabbits out of dead bodies, like. And I think if I remember correctly, like I think Marcel and them had an issue with it as well. But it's been so long ago, so.
I did not really think twice about it. I remember thinking it was a little odd, but like, I think Dave really had an issue with it. Cause like he brought it up specifically and he was like, if they just would have started off the show like that, he's like, no, he's like, when that happens, like, what the fuck am I watching?
And the crazy thing is, I don't think he's actually gotten to, I may be wrong, but I don't think he's actually gotten to the Fallen part. Because I think that's more of an issue.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you just got done, like, reassembling all of her bones or whatever and making a black magic circle. And then, like, putting out meat from the dragon to, like, make her so, all this stuff, basically what it boils down to, you can, like, say that technically... Lyles and company was eating Fallen at that time, right?
In a way, because she's been digested, yeah.
So yeah,
her nutrients are in the meat.
I mean, you know, like that's kind of a little bit messed up. You're literally cooking this shit right there beside the body or whatever. You're eating the creature that ate your sister and your best friend. That consumed her all the way. You're literally having to like pick bones up and pick them apart, and like I don't know, man. Like that's just kind of
fucked up. It is fucked up. It's real fucked up. Oh man, and that's just like mixed in with the rest of the fucked up shit that's going on, along with like the random comedy and lightheartedness. Oh man, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't really pay too much attention to that part with the dragon, but yeah, that's now that you've reframed that for me, I'm gonna have to look twice at these people.
And like, even though like the humor has kind of like, so the beginning of the series, like the humor was like always there, like it was a very light and funny show or whatever. Now the humor is still there. It's just like, Lyles becoming deranged about eating monsters during certain times, and it's still there and it still hits. It's just they're using Lyles and like Senshi and like the reactions from like Chilchuck and Marcel and other people to get our laughs out, and I think it still hits. So
it definitely still hits, and it has to, because like a lot of it's like very dark, so like you need the comic relief. It has to happen somehow, and they're doing it in a good way, I think.
Yeah. They're keeping it very balanced, I think. So I really enjoy what they're doing with it.
True. Same. But yeah, after Shuro's group kind of comes in, and they've lost Fallen again, it comes up that, well, Lyles' dumbass tells them that Marcel uses black magic, and we learned that, I mean, it's black magic, it's outlawed, but also like the governing elves that have governing body over this part of the, well, the dungeon. I think they gave it to the humans or the dwarves at one point, but they're solely against that shit. And like the whole world hates black magic. And I just think, I thought it was going to be like a small taboo, but like how big of a deal do you think that shit's going to become in the rest of this cower? I think it's going to be a fucking issue.
I think so too. And like you said, we've seen like Chilchuck be like cautious and like, or doesn't really want her to be around black magic. Senshi just doesn't like magic at all, but Chilchuck doesn't like black magic or whatever. And I think that they're showing, so like the dungeon master or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I initially thought it was a she, but they call it a he. So he uses black magic as well. That's what makes this dungeon run. So I guess having that type of power is probably bad for just anybody to have. And I would say that that's probably why people, like, they keep a lockdown on it. Especially, I think that also something happened with the, I think they've hinted a few times that something has happened with black magic and elves.
Yes.
I don't think we know about what happened yet, but I think something significant happened that created a lot of destruction or distrust amongst elves. And the fact that I think it's more of an issue that she's an elf that's practicing black magic than it would be if she was another race practicing black magic.
They seem to think that's particularly dangerous.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to learn why, and why the governing elves also think it's terrible. But it's very interesting that like everybody in the main party has a different viewpoint of it. I mean, Marcel's obviously 100% on board. She uses it. I don't think she uses it all the time, but like when she deems it necessary, that's just like in her toolkit. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's just another tool for her. But like you said, Senshi hates magic 100%. Chilchuck thinks magic's very useless. I mean, useful, but absolutely hates dark magic. Lyos is like, whatever gets the job done, I don't fucking care. And Fallen seems very indifferent to it as well, especially considering her friendship with Marcel. So, yeah, very interesting. They all have like a very, or most of them have a very different view of it.
And I think in that one arc where it showed Marcel and Fallen in like when they first met each other or whatever, I think it showed that Marcel actually doesn't want to use black magic for like what everyone else thinks that black magic can be used for, but she wants to find a way to use it for the good. And I forget like what her goal was, but it was something like for like the good of people or whatever. So
yeah, that's true. Like she's not power hungry or like trying to be destructive with it. It's just like something she's studying at school to like you said, for the betterment of everybody, but that's not how everybody else sees it because it's a terrible thing that has happened somewhere along their history. Yeah.
Wasn't it something to do with like growing food or something? Wasn't that her goal, was to learn how to use black magic to like grow food or
I really don't remember.
Something like that. I'm pretty sure it was something like that, but I can't remember what exactly it was. But I'm going to have to go figure it out later because it's interesting. So
yeah. It's probably something important, but nobody else cares. Yeah.
Except for Fallen.
True. Fallen, you think they can actually save her from this dungeon master? Because we saw her like harpy dragon form and she murked like everybody. Yeah. I think she's toast, bro.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's what the show does so well. Like, it's shrouded us in mystery. Like, we only know so much about this, what's going on and like how stuff works. All we do know is like Fallon is one of the strongest, like, or the strongest human mages or whatever that we've seen or that has been seen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, I'm just curious, like if Marcel and them happen to get rid of the dungeon master or the mad whatever mage, if that will like make her be able to go back to what she was after they reincarnate, like revived her, like, but she won't be the same, obviously. But maybe I think she's strong enough to live with that form.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause like the dungeon master definitely has like control over her. And like when it first happened and the dungeon master came back and like called Fallon out, outside of the building, I was like, did they revive Fallon or this dragon? Like, cause the dungeon master was like, you know, you're the fucking dragon. So is it like both of them swimming around in there? Like, and I don't know if they could be like separated again, you know?
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing too, because we've also heard them say that, the dragon's soul is in there with her now or whatever. And so I think, like I said, I think she's powerful enough to like take over that soul and keep it under control. But mm-hmm. we just don't know how that works when they go topside or whatever. Like, does that soul stay in there? Does she have to fight for, you know, position the whole time? Like, how does that work? We just don't know yet. So
yeah, and I think being topside, that's going to be a big problem for Fallon, because she was like resurrected with dark magic and has the dragon in her, which is dark magic. Comes from dark magic, so she might have some problems. Not maybe with the dragon spirit itself, but other people.
Yeah, especially if the other party members have loose lips, because I'm pretty sure almost everyone knows now.
Yeah.
After last episode. So it's kind of curious, like, how that ends up, that whole situation. If they was to save her, like, how Marcel and Fallon, like, navigate outside of the dungeon. So
yeah, that's gonna be very interesting. I think they're gonna end up going back to the east with Shiro.
I think so. Okay.
Yeah, I think so, because he's like the prince of whatever eastern island he's from.
Okay.
And I think like that's the only place they'll probably end up being safe. Also helps that Shiro really likes Fallon and wants her to come to the east and marry her. So I think that might be their escape in the end.
And it doesn't really seem like Fallon is interested in romantic, the pursuit of romance. You know what I mean?
Well, we don't know much about her. Like, she was like in the show as herself for like an episode, maybe two.
True.
And we haven't seen those two interact.
Yeah, we haven't seen that. We've only seen her interact with Marcel, and she seemed to be very, I guess, self-contained. I don't know how to describe her.
Right. And even if they don't, like Shiro and Fallon don't get together at some point, like, he's definitely still going to have, like, a soft spot for her. And, like, say, hey, just come to the kingdom and lay low. Lay low. Don't tell anybody what the fuck's going on.
If you was Shiro, right,
mm-hmm.
How would you feel about your potential loved one that you want to get with or whatever, if you saw her in that form killing people?
Shit, boy. Shit.
Would you feel the same way, bro?
Me personally, no. But this is an anime, you know what I'm saying? I would not be fucking with her at all. She killed all my homies except for like one or two. Yeah, nah, that wouldn't fly. That would never fly.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, I don't think I could. I just don't think I could like
separate
forget
that
what I'm seeing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's some traumatic shit.
Like, I think I would be scared. Like, what if I piss her off, bro? Like, is she gonna turn into a dragon on me? So,
oh man. I think this is like a little bit longer down the line, but the, like kind of like the last question I had was like, one thing that was brought up at the beginning of the anime is whoever defeats the dungeon kind of becomes the king of the dungeon or king of whatever. And Kabru brought up the issue that Laos defeating the dungeon, he's not the type to be a ruler. He's very like, he doesn't have those qualities to be a king or to govern. Like, what's your opinion about that? Because I think that's going to become a bigger play in the story and a reason why somebody else might want to take care of the dungeon in the end.
So, if they defeat the dungeon, like, are you saying that they have to stay there or something and, like, govern it?
No. Maybe. I don't know the logistics of it.
Yeah.
But the reason the dungeon was created, like, is for somebody to defeat it and become the king of maybe the dungeon or maybe the land around it. I'm not really sure which, but yeah. Kabru brought it up. It's like, I don't know if he would actually close this dungeon down if he became the leader. The leader of what? I'm kind of unsure about. But yeah, it seems like it's an important topic. At least to Kabru. And I don't think anybody else has put too much thought into it. We've had a couple people bring it up, but it seems to be like important.
The thing that would confuse me about that is if they do defeat the dungeon, that means they defeat the Mad Mage or whatever. Mm-hmm. And from what we've heard so far, the Mad Mage is what keeps this dungeon, his magic is what keeps this dungeon in shape. And like living, I guess you could say. So like if they do defeat this dungeon, I think somebody has to take his place for it to stay open. And I just now thought about this. What if Fallen's the one that takes his place?
That'd be crazy.
Like Fallen takes his place and Laos would become the like governor or whatever topside, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense, right?
It does.
I don't know if that answers your question, but...
Yeah, I wonder if Laos would like actually be a good ruler or like has any goals. You know? Because that's what Kabru was worried about. He's like, he just doesn't seem like... He wouldn't know what to do with that power, you know? And I don't think he would use it well. And I don't either. Laos is kind of a dunce.
I don't know, like... If he was ruler, if he was like the leader ruler of the dungeon, then I just don't think that he would view it as that. I think that he would just continue doing what he's doing. Right. Like he's the leader of the company right now, but is he truly a leader? Like,
right.
No.
And that's why I think the issue is. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, he still does it. And like he still gets him through it, all these like, moments, right?
So. Yeah, he does. He does.
So... I mean, maybe with the help of, you know, some members of a party like Chilchuck and them, maybe, I don't know, that right. He would be a decent ruler of a bigger than a party or whatever. So,
yeah, I could see that, like kind of how we like have with presidents in the United States, like you have a president, but then you have his cabinet that takes care of the different areas of the country.
Yeah. And. Yeah. We just don't know, like, outside of this small island or whatever, like, what else is out there? We've heard them talk about, like, the east where Shiro is from. We've heard them talk about, like, elves and stuff. So, like, we just don't really know what the extent of this one island is or whatever, so.
Right. But, yeah, I'm excited to find out. But I think that's going to become a bigger question as time goes on in the story. Maybe not this season. Definitely not this core, probably. But yeah, I think later it's become an issue.
Yeah. One more question. I just now thought about it. Like, so in the early episodes or whatever, like most of the season, we have like very little fan service, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
I think the last... Like starting with the like after the reincarnation or the resurrection of Fallen, I think we're getting like a more of like bits and pieces of more fan service here and there. Do you think so? Are you enjoying it?
We've definitely got more fan service. Like, we got Marcel and Fallon, like, I think bathing it was.
Taking a bath and shit together.
That was wild. I just didn't see it coming at all.
Yeah, I mean, this show didn't, like, really do anything like that until after that moment, so.
Yeah, it seemed very random. I'm not a big fan of service guy, so I don't think it's necessary, but.
Yeah. And like
it sells. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Like, I was just curious if you noticed that change and if you like
outside of that one moment, I didn't really notice it.
Well, so like in this last episode, like she takes off her shirt or tears her shirt off or whatever.
Yeah, that is right. You know?
And then it also shows like the harpies with like titties and nipples and shit.
True.
Like,
so it is picking up a little bit.
Yeah. I just noticed it like after that, like we've gotten like bits of fan service here and there. And I was just wondering like if you noticed it as well and if you think it's gonna take away from what Dungeon Meshi, like how the story has been created so far, you know?
If it goes any farther than what's been going, I definitely think it could take away from it. Okay. For me, fan service takes away from a lot of stories.
Yeah.
That's my problem with a lot of anime. Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, why they decided to, like, just start doing it, like, here and there. Like, I understand, like, the harpies and shit, you know? Like, it is what it is. Like, they're human mixed with, like, birds or whatever. You get what you get, but I don't know. Some scenes was like, you could tell that they're like just doing it just to do it, I guess. So.
Yeah, it seems very, very unnecessary in this show and misplaced. So. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's all I got for the Dungeon Meshi. Do you have anything else you want to touch on?
That's it for me, my man.
Well, so far through 17 episodes, I think this is a recommended show for Bass and I. I think we're really enjoying it, especially the darker side. We got 7 more episodes to go, and we are not sure how it's going to turn out, but it's probably going to be really fun. So
yeah, if it keeps going like it's been going, it's going to be very entertaining.
Yeah. So with that being said, that is the end of our Dungeon Meshi, aka Delicious and Dungeon, up to episode 17 discussion. So if y'all enjoyed this, make sure you leave a review, leave a rating, 5-star, hopefully, on any of your podcast platforms. Also, if you want to join the Discord or follow us on any of the socials, it is linktree.com/animedegens. And we shall see you on Tuesday for the weekly rundown. Later.
Bye.